Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 4th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Brian Basting of Advanced Trading out of Bloomington, Illinois, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
As usual, let's start with our list of things we should talk about. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, what's on your list?
Well, I think two things. Number one, the developments of the dollar this week. We saw a big break in the dollar. And acreage. We're starting to hear more and more people talk about acreage and hearing a lot of people thinking more corn acres, but I'm not so sure I agree with that. So I think both of those are important points.
Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska.
Well, Chip stole my number one about the U.S. dollar, but that also ties into, I guess, the global economy. I mean, how worried are we that a slowing manufacturing base, both here and more importantly in Asia, how worried are we about that affecting the grain markets?
And then Brian Basting of Advanced Trading from Bloomington, Illinois.
I would say still, as we get into early February here, Todd, looking at the weather markets in South America, maybe not getting quite as much attention lately with some stabilization in the Brazilian situation, but I think still the double crop of corn, the situation in Brazil warrants attention, as well as the developing attention with the warmer and drier conditions in parts of Argentina. And the other thing I'd emphasize is more from a marketing standpoint that we think it's extremely important to maintain flexibility in the marketing moving into this growing season ahead for 2016 for 2016 production of corn and beans.
Now, let's start with you, Brian. I made note that you had produced earlier in the week, and I think you do this on a weekly basis, a video that was released in part on your Twitter feed. Remind me of your Twitter account, and then tell me a little bit about that video. You focused on South America, and I think the double crop problems you might see for corn there.
Yeah, we do publish that video approximately once a week, Todd, and it's just an effort to reach out to folks and kind of give another avenue for communicating views on the markets. Probably the biggest thing we're seeing in immediate term here is some dryness developing in parts of Argentina, some corn areas, key corn areas in the central and eastern part of the country. Obviously not extremely critical, as we've seen a little market response, but not a lot. But I think as you go forward here, still important to monitor that. They are calling for some moisture here to move in this week and this weekend. They'll be important, as your listeners know. Anytime you're talking about pollination for corn, it's really, really delicate. So I think if they were to get that moisture, the market would concerns would be lifted. And if they don't, then I think that could be a little bit of a developing issue. The larger one, I think longer term, may be the double crop safrinha corn acreage in northern Brazil. That crop is going to be planted later here in February than it has been the last few years, which will raise the importance of getting a extended rainy season. Each of the last 4 years in the double crop corn acres in northern Brazil has experienced a late or extended rainy season. And as a result, they've benefited from that. When I say they, the producers obviously in northern Brazil, and they've established record corn production. But if the crop is planted later here this year, as it is now, and the rainy season ends on a normal time, we could see that production contract quite a bit from where it has been the last few years. So I'm not ready to discount the weather situation in South America quite yet.
CONAB today, in fact, put out some numbers for first and second crop corn in Brazil. They would be the USDA of Brazil. First crop corn at 28.35 million metric tons. These would be harvest numbers. And second crop, which is a much larger crop at 54.99 million metric tons. How much of that you think would be at risk? And that number, by the way, is up a million metric tons from their earlier estimate of 83.3 total.
Yeah, those are important numbers, Todd. It emphasizes how important that double crop production is. What I would caution is that the acreage in that northern area is probably going to be higher than what people expected earlier, and that may be a function of a couple things. Number one, the fact that they are getting more moisture lately and maybe alleviated some of those dry weather concerns, but the currency is also the domestic price. The effective domestic price that the Mato Grosso, for example, producer is receiving has been firmer than what they would have ever anticipated probably last fall. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I do anticipate a later planted crop in that northern area and some challenges there with the rainy season. But as you mentioned, the production capability is there if they do get extended rainy season or favorable weather throughout pollination because of the increased acreage. So it's really been a thorn in the side of the U.S. this crop year as far as exports, as far as the tremendous production that they experienced last year. And so it's something the market's going to be monitoring very closely. It's not going to be an immediate impact, but it's something that if that number drops from what it has been the last 4 years, and then down the road it would be mildly supportive to U.S. exports.
Just as a reminder to folks that listen to this program, oftentimes I will talk about the Twitter account, but it seems to be a really good place for producers, farmers from all over the planet, along with those who are interested in the marketplace. Many of the brokers, folks like Brian Bastien and Lane Cobb and Chip Nellinger, all have Twitter accounts. Brian's, by the way, is at Brian Bastien, B-A-S-T-I-N-G, Brian the normal way, B-R-I-A-N. ATI, which stands for Advanced Trading Incorporated, at Brian Bastien Inc., or ATI. And it's really a good way to get information. I follow a lot of folks on Twitter. It's really simple to do. You can go to twitter.com, sign up to get your own Twitter account. You can follow that on your smartphone, on your iPad, iOS, Apple device, or Android, even just on your computer or your laptop. Doesn't matter, but it's a really good place to get information. Again, the Twitter account at twitter.com. And you can follow me. My address is at Commodity Week. Elaine Cubb's address is really simple. Elaine, you are, it's just Elaine Cubb, and Cubb spelled with a K. Very nice, by the way. You wanted to talk a little bit about the global economy. Can you put it into context of what you think might be happening in South America at this point?
Well, I want you to know that I literally just now followed Brian on Twitter, as you mentioned his Twitter account, so that was useful to me. Yeah, so in South America, for instance, I mean, okay, let's put this in context. This week, since the end of last week, we've seen the U.S. dollar index collapse by 3%. It has been a very sudden and volatile fall, but the grains have not responded positively. You know, ordinarily we expect dollar to fall, grains go up, or vice versa. It has not, because the reasoning behind the dollar fall this week is because of bearishness or disappointment about the U.S. economy or the prospects of the U.S. continuing to raise interest rates. What would be nice for us, what we'd be hoping to see, is developing economies or outside economies like Brazil, for them to end their recession, for their currencies to start strengthening, and that to be the factor that might let the dollar sink back down. What happened this week was not the preferred way for us to have lower dollar value. So yeah, with regards to South America, and more importantly, also China, we would like to see these outside economies start to imitate our strength or our economic health, and for their currencies to start to strengthen, for their manufacturing sectors to strengthen, for their consumer demand. We don't know that consumer demand has really fallen off in China. The conventional wisdom is that it is more a manufacturing problem still, but that's what we're looking at, and unfortunately that's why the grains have not received much of a bounce from weaker dollar this week.
And Chip Nellinger, you also had the dollar on your radar for this week. By the way, Chip's at Blue Reef Trader, all one word, Blue Reef Trader, at Blue Reef Trader on his Twitter account. You've been watching the dollar. It's been a sharp drop. I think the last time we dropped this far was back in December.
Yeah, and I agree with Elaine. The dollar has to be kind of front and center on all our radar screens. But I would add just a little twist to that. The dollar isn't just one thing. It's the U.S. currency in relation to a lot of different currencies. And so some of this, as we fall, can kind of catch fire and and add fuel to the momentum. So I like the drop in the dollar, although it hasn't, at least for this week, affected the grains in a supportive manner. If this is just the start of a big reversal of a lot of money that's been long the dollar only because we're going to raise interest rates, which we did, kind of buy the rumor, sell the fact type of a thing, it still could eventually, in my opinion, give us a supportive lift to commodities and grains. So even though it didn't in the very short run here, I think that we can't rule out that if this is just the start of a lot of money flowing back out of the dollar, we could back ourselves into exactly what Elaine was talking about. And in a relative manner, those other currencies stabilize more than ours, which could give us a lift. So that, I'm hopeful that that might be a little bit longer term, but it's I'd rather see the dollar drop 3% than appreciate by 3% over the last couple of days.
Okay, I don't know if any of the three of you will know the answer to this, but what if it's just deflation, so the dollar goes down and everything else does, so that it's all just part and parcel of crude oil and the very low price of crude oil that looks like it's going to stay there for quite some time?
No comment. So,
and I don't know whether that's even a place to go, frankly. Just as you were discussing this thing, I was thinking, well, the price of crude oil is just low, and it seems to be the master price, and maybe I'm wrong, of all things across the planet at the moment. It's energy. And I guess I think of everything in terms of energy, whether it's protein to operate a body, whether that be your own body or, you know, a hog or a cattle, or whether you're dropping energy into a car. What if what we're actually seeing is deflation? And I guess maybe I'm just scratching around for things to think about. Let's move on.
No, I think you're right on that. I think that we have been seeing a lot of deflation. That's been part of what's been depressing our grain market. So I'm hopeful that we're maybe towards the end of that. So let me put it a different way. I'm not so sure we have to go a lot lower in crude oil. Even if crude oil bounces, I don't believe we've seen the worst or all the bankruptcies or write-downs from energy companies, but I think that happens no matter what. I mean, you could probably take crude oil back to 50 in the short run. You've done the damage financially to a lot of those companies. So I think we're late in the game here, and I think we have had a pretty deflationary environment for, you know, a couple of years now, but I'm hopeful that we're at least towards the end of this, but we'll have to see. A lot of that depends on the dollar and currency fluctuations and world growth. So that's just my two cents on the deflation part.
So let me see if I got this right. That brings you back to the same place we started with both, and I believe you too, Elaine Cubb, that the dollar, the drop in the dollar and the value, if it's maintained at this point, will lead maybe to a more competitive marketplace for U.S. grains and oil seeds on the world market, correct?
Well, and ideally, if the drop in the dollar is coming from global strength. I will say something if this makes you guys feel a little bit better. It's not going to, but I see this afternoon that Obama has proposed that the government add an extra $10 on every barrel of oil, and we don't have to get into that too much. But, yeah, I agree with Chip generally that hopefully the oil market will bottom out here or find a bottom, and hopefully some of the downward pressure that it has experienced has been an overreaction on the fear of lower demand rather than just oversupply. We absolutely know that the market is well supplied, amply supplied, abundantly supplied with oil, both domestically and globally. But we're hoping to someday in the next quarter or so confirm that global demand has not fallen off. But, you know, that's a real possibility.
Brian, do you have anything to add?
No, that oil market is extraordinarily volatile, as you and your listeners know, Todd. It's difficult to say. It seems like markets have a way of overreacting both to the upside several years ago now when oil went as high as it did and now to the downside. So I do think that will come a point here where there's a value level. And I agree with Elaine's point that demand is something we can't ignore. We are focused on supply right now. And needless to say, there's a tremendous amount out there right now in terms of production, but I think eventually we'll start to get arms around that, and I think whether it's oil or corn, soybeans, low prices do cure low prices. If we do see this market happen to go lower eventually, we are going to reach a point where we will reduce production and stimulate increased demand. But we'll just have to see where that point's reached. But it's an extraordinarily volatile market right now, and I think that we just have to let it play out down here. But there is a point where it is going to stabilize, and I think that's going to be something that will eventually help stabilize grain prices, particularly linked to corn.
You suggested, and I know, Chip, this is on your list of things to talk about, so you can jump in as soon as we get an answer here from Brian, but you suggested that low prices cure low prices. Acreage is one of the ways that that's happened. Do you have any inkling that in the United States there will be adjustments?
Well, I think so, but I'm beginning to think I'm in the minority. There's no doubt with prevent plant that our total acreage base is going to grow a little bit, but I just have a hard time believing, just based on what you said, low prices to low prices. Look at the far northwest corn belt. They're not very far above $3 cash price. I still believe, in talking to some producers in the south, that there could be some more cotton and peanut acreage down there. I think the fringe areas, maybe even some ground that goes back into hay in the far western corn belt. I have a hard time believing it, especially after talking to a lot of bankers here over the last few months, that we can greatly expand corn acreage. But again, you've got some people, private firms out saying that, as much as 1.5 million, 2 million additional corn acres. What I think, though, is that's a good thing that we're talking and debating that. In February, it leaves me hope that maybe the market sees some possible fluctuations, and we don't have to have it come through. We just need the market to fear that we're going to lose corn acreage. In my brain, it seems like we could pretty easily, but we'll see. I'm interested in Elaine and Brian's opinions on that.
I would concur with Chip on that point. Especially at this point, Todd, I think that one of the things that we did see when corn was at $6, $7, $8 was to encourage production. Obviously, high prices did eventually cure high prices with more production here in the U.S. and generally favorable weather and more production overseas. But what the comment that Chip made, I strongly agree with, is that the fringe acres that were brought into production in the south, in the northwest corn belt, northern plains, certainly don't look as attractive in 2016 as they did, and needless to say, in years like 2013 or 14, even lower than last year. So I think you start to look at the fact that, yes, we're going to plant a lot of corn in 2016, but I think most of that is linked to the core production states that always grow corn, and the other areas that may change. As Chip commented on, the south looking at things like cotton, peanuts, I'd add rice to that mix as a possibility. Down in the southern areas as an alternative, again, not super attractive, any of those relative to corn or beans for that matter, but maybe the best choice among a basket of unattractive choices, for lack of a better phrase. But if they do elect to plant, some folks may elect not to plant at all in 2016. Time will tell, but I think that's something that may be understated by the market, that the fact that these prices have just reached a point here in the profitability associated with the production cycle. And you start to look at the production costs not ratcheting down near as fast as we've seen in corn and bean prices. Eventually, that's going to have an impact. And so we'll see. The counter to that, I would add and conclude with, is that with the yield production we've seen these last 2 years, we still have the production capability to raise a large crop in 2016, even if we see a surprise on the acreage relative to expectations in terms of the downside. So there's some offsetting factors there maybe moving forward, but we'll see.
Elaine Cubb, a lot of me wants to say, hey, Elaine, I'm yodeling at you. You're way out there in the western part of the Corn Belt, but you are in the number three corn-producing state in the nation. A lot of corn comes out of Nebraska. Still, you're closer to the Dakotas. What do you think?
Well, I was going to say this is very relevant. I've just been working on my cost estimates for the land I farm in South Dakota, where Chip mentioned, you know, harvest prices are pretty close to that $3 mark, and it makes me kind of panic. I mean, and this is true for Nebraska also, where if we're going to experience any dryness this summer, it gets very expensive for them to irrigate. It's expensive to grow corn. So where we very well might see an increase in overall row acreage, I believe that wheat acres, wheat is a dog, those will be abandoned. Sorghum acres are not as much fun to grow in 2016 as they were in 2015, now that we've lost some of China's bullishness. So, well, like I said, we might experience this overall increase in row crop acres, but maybe soybeans could be favored above corn just from the cost aspect of it. That's my point. It's kind of panicky when you look and project out a near loss or a loss. And you might, I mean, I suspect that I'm not the only one looking out there and trying to think of ways that I can bring down the costs and maybe grow a cheaper crop.
Yeah, so this brings me to that, back to the winter wheat seedings report. There were, 2.8 million acres that were lacking in that report from the previous year, right?
Yeah, why would you want to grow? It's what, $5? $4.50? Yeah.
So most likely into soybeans?
I think behaviorally that, you know, you're probably going to stick with your rotation, but to the extent that you're going to switch acres one way or the other, switch row crop acres, I suspect that, you know, value-oriented farmers might be looking more at soybeans than corn.
So this brings me to... not corn, but soybeans themselves, where we have a very large expected corn or soybean carryout. We'll get an update of that, by the way, next week with the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates. But do we have concerns that that number can grow from the current number up to 500, 600, or 700 million bushels as an ending carryout for the 2016-17 growing season, Chip?
That's something that's going to hang over us for sure, but that's assuming a lot. That's assuming we do get more planted acreage in the ground and we have another big crop, and it could grow. I think that's something that will hang over us, but I think for the market to worry too much about that yet is a little premature. We've got to raise the crop, but that is going to be a potential if you get the the wrong variables in place, we could easily grow carry out.
Okay, I want to come back to the old crop now and stick with the soybean. Something that I think I saw in the charts, and I'm no chartist, was a pennant or a flag, or at least for the monthly chart on the lead option, pointing to February being a breakout month at some point here. Am I looking at that chart correctly? And do we break to the top or the bottom? And I'll start with you, Brian.
Well, certainly you could argue there from a chartist standpoint, there's some basing down here that we're seeing. We've seen a basic sideways pattern pretty much in the soybean market since the completion of harvest there in late October, late November. And so, we've seen some good demand trends. Obviously, our demand for exports this year is not as good as last year with the competition from South America, but it's still not terrible. Domestic demand, meal consumption continues to be surprisingly good. Obviously, we're seeing the meal price come down. Maybe that's helping encourage some clearance there. But I think anytime you start to talk about the soybean market, it's going to be linked closely now to the finish to the growing season in South America and once we get into our growing season. And, I would back up just a second and agree that the prospect is there in 16-17 for your 500 to maybe higher carryout. But the demand base is strong, and any type of weather scare and or, I guess I'd first start out with a acreage surprise, would be something that maybe triggers some buying. But I do think it's going to be a prove-it situation to the upside on beans because of that carryout. When we think back just a year and a half ago, we had less than 100 million bushel carryout sitting in the bins on September 1st of 2014. And here we are nearly a year and a half later, and we're talking about nearly a 500 million bushel carryout for this year. So, yeah, there's some possibilities there, but I think we need to maintain flexibility in marketing to protect the downside. And yet, if it does break out, terrific from a producer standpoint and manage the upside. But it's going to take some fundamental changes, I think, to trigger a move that way.
So another item I want to take up again is basis levels from the west to the east. It's pretty clear that in the eastern Corn Belt that farmers have been rewarding the basis level, mostly by locking in basis with contracts. So there's still a lot of, I guess that corn's in the marketplace at this point, but it will show up at some point in the futures contracts. I don't think that has happened in the western Corn Belt. Are there worries there, or do they just have enough corn that they're feeling better about what they have left to market? And Elaine, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, I am still seeing extremely strong bids from the processor levels out here in the western Corn Belt. For instance, I'm looking in Council Bluffs. The ethanol plant is bidding 9 under for February, 8 under for March. I mean, that's very unseasonably strong. And it makes me worry that at some point between now and harvest, we're going to have, you know, this huge fall apart. And I mean, this is just going to have to eventually fall apart because the grain is eventually going to have to move, you know?
Right. Well, what do farmers in your area to do? What are they to do? So do you want them to lock the basis in on their corn and then to market off the futures contract? And does that negate what you just told me?
No, absolutely. I think that this is the time. This is an excellent time frame to take advantage of these basis markets. And I don't think, I don't think it's a terrible time of year to be marketing grain out of a bin. I think that you need to lock in the basis one way or the other before you get to a summertime fall apart in that basis. Whether you want to re-own it as futures or whether you want to only lock in the basis and not lock in the futures price in your contract that you write with your buyer, how you want to do it, you know, that is probably a personal decision. But I absolutely think that these basis levels should be looked at closely.
Okay, so I think what I'm trying to get at, and maybe Brian and Chip, you can help me out on this, is wondering how much of both corn and soybeans maybe has been moved into the marketplace through a basis contract, and the farmers are simply long on the board at that point. And does this make a difference if there's enough that's already moved into the marketplace? Do you understand what I mean?
I believe you're saying, have we moved enough old crop corn? Is it still going to hang over us like a wet blanket? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Is it has, because once they've locked in the basis, that corn's gone. That's been marketed by the elevator operator.
Yeah, I think we have had a nice uptick since the first of the year. In some grain moving. And like you mentioned, that's a good sign. Whether it's on a basis contract or just price, it's into the system and it's getting used. So I think from a tax perspective, a cash flow perspective, and we've had a little bounce in the futures as well. So I do think there's been a nice uptick in grain movement here. I think there's a lot more to go. So I do think it's still going to hang over us a little bit. But I also think we're at the point here where you need to kind of make a decision on, am I going to move this corn in the next 45 days? Then you probably ought to be thinking about locking some of that basis in and trying to catch a little bounce in that time frame in the futures to clean it up. If not, you almost have to make the decision, I'm going to hold it till July or August. Some of that's going to be a potential bet on a dry weather scare. And let's face it, I think we will have some good summer basis opportunities as well, especially in the eastern Corn Belt. But that's a different animal, and not every producer can do that. So I think we're kind of getting on the calendar frame here where you'd have to make that determination, if that makes sense.
I think flexibility in marketing means that once you make that decision to sell the grain, I'll back up just a second. Once you make a decision to put the basis contract on, you just hit the nail on the head. You're long futures, so you basically have no floor. And basically, you're at the mercy of if the market breaks here. If it goes higher, terrific. If it breaks, it's not so good. So what I'd encourage your listeners to think about is, number one, if they have made a basis contract, how are they going to market that grain now? Any unpriced bushels, whether it's a basis contract or just crop that's on the farm or in the elevator, we think a floor is a very attractive tool to put in there. A put option, for example, locks in a floor and leaves the upside open. I think anytime you move forward here, that when you get your arms around, when a producer gets their arms around 2015 bushels, and what I've picked up the last 2 months on the winter meeting circuit is there's a large, much larger than normal percentage of corn that's unpriced from 2015. So I think that's an issue that, as you mentioned, it's kind of been hanging over the market like a wet blanket. And with the grain moving in the market with the basis contracts, I think you've got a market that still feels heavy. We've had a little bit of a rebound. Just strongly encourage your listeners to think about considering getting protection on those 15 bushels, leaving the flexibility to participate in a rally, which could certainly occur due to a variety of factors, but then turn their focus to 16. And we think the first part of the 16 is linked to, of course, the crop insurance base price that we're going to set here in February, and we move forward from there. But, yeah, I do think that there's a tremendous amount of corn from that 15 crop that's weighed on the market since harvest until this little recent rally. And we'll see what happens from now until planting season. But right now I'd encourage your listeners to think about getting that crop priced in one form or another, either it's a basis contract or some type of downside protection that leave the upside open as much as possible.
Brian Bastian, of course, is with Advanced Trading. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. You can find him on Twitter at Brian Bastian ATI. Elaine Cubb is with Mastering the Grain Markets. She's in Elkhorn, Nebraska. Her handle on Twitter is at Elaine Cubb. Do you have a final word for us today, Elaine?
Well, you know, we have talked about the WASDE report coming up next week, and we have not seen a lot of volatility in the grain markets, but with the outside markets moving around, with WASDE coming up, with the general tendency of these February, the new crop prices being set for insurance, there tends to be always some kind of volatility coming in. I just have a little suspicion that we're going to get a little wilder next week.
And Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He's out of Morton, Illinois. His Twitter handle is at Blue Reef Trader. Chip, your final word?
Well, we haven't talked a lot about new crop here, but I think this is the time frame, this winter time frame, to zero in on two things. Number one, get those costs as close to zeroed in as possible. Once you have that, that's a great advantage over, and I mean all costs, not just seed, nitrogen, fertilizer, all costs to put this crop out next year, and that's going to give you some ammunition, and then plan ahead and know exactly where profitability is. I'm with Elaine. I think you can get some rallies here over the next few weeks, but we may need to reward those. And if you don't know where you stand, it's going to put you at a disadvantage. You're not going to know whether it's good enough on the rally or if you need more. So I think now's the time to plan for new crop.
Our thanks to our panelists, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets, and Brian Bastian of Advanced Trading, for joining us on this February 4 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Remember, you can find all of our programming anytime you'd like to listen to on demand on our website. The address is WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.